Health with Temple of Health Radio Show, and today I'm pleased to have with me Tricia McCannon, who is the author of Dialogues with the Angels, and her new book is set to come out with Hampton Roads in March of this year, I guess next month. This is a great book, one that is probably going to set the traditional religious world on its ear for a little bit, but hopefully they'll get used to it. This book is called Jesus, the Explosive Story of the 30 Lost Years and the Ancient Mystery Religions. And Tricia had so kindly given me a copy of at least a portion of the book back before she ever even found Hampton Roads to publish it. So I'm really happy that she was able to get this book out. It's coming out very shortly, and I think it will be a sensational success. Hello, Tricia. How are you today?
Good morning, Susan. Thank you so much for having me on your wonderful show.
Well, great. I'm so glad that the book is coming out and that people will finally begin to understand how Jesus' story actually fits into a much greater story involving the mysteries, involving spiritual hierarchy, and a lot of things that traditional religions may or may not be aware of, at least at the level of where most of the people are. I think at the higher levels, they're more aware of the things that you're talking about in the book.
Indeed, you're right, Susan. I think one of the things that's so exciting about this book for everyone who has read it, and you know, my agent in New York and the publisher, and probably had about 20 people who've read portions of it or all of it, and you know, I've had everything from people who said, I never had a connection with Jesus, I never got why he was so important, and now I really love him. Because I think the book does take you on a very deep personal journey, not only Jesus' journey through the many lands that he traveled through in the ancient mystery religions, but it also takes you on a personal journey. So that's one of the powerful, impactful things. But of course, as you know, having seen part of the book, it's highly historical.
Right.
I was very fortunate to get access to some of the little-known records within the Vatican, Gnostic texts that very few people know about, historical records out of England, out of India, out of Persia, and out of Egypt. And all of these things really paint a very profound picture of Jesus' involvement with the great mystery schools of the past and the Great White Brotherhood.
And what's so interesting to me is that, you know, I grew up in a traditional home of a Methodist religion, so I attended Bible study and everything. So, but basically, in our traditional understanding, pretty much Jesus' personal life is limited to, the time around his birth, and we all know that story because that's told to all children who are
the nativity, in fact,
right,
yes, that's
right.
What Christmas is, of course, about.
And then it kind of skips forward to the, at least in my mind, it skips forward mostly to where he goes 40 days in the desert and then comes out, having been Christed, and then he starts his three-year ministry, which most of the Bible is about. But there's a huge amount there. And this is where your book is so useful in describing that Jesus was really traveled the world and participated in many things that initiates of that time participated in.
Well, we do have the story when he was 12. That's the only time we hear about him before. Like you said, he shows up and isn't anointed and baptized by John,
right,
and goes
right
for those 40 days. So the story when he was 12 is a very interesting one because in some of the, a combination of about five different apocryphal texts, they talk about what he said to those rabbis and priests in the Jewish temple that rocked them on their heels and that was so
right
profoundly impressive. He talked about astrology, astronomy.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about the descent of the soul from the higher realms into the physical mortal body. He talked about reincarnation. He spoke about physics and metaphysics, mathematics, and sacred geometry. He really presented a level of knowledge that seems to have been far more advanced, really, than even the rabbis in the Jerusalem temple, which, of course, were primarily the Pharisees and Sadducees. So, of course, we have to begin to ask, even at that early juncture, well, how did he learn all of these things? And this would bring us, of course, to the fact that he had been taught already at that point within the ancient mystery schools, and certainly the Essene order, which was stationed primarily at Qumran, several miles outside of Jerusalem, would have been the primary place, or let's say, or chapter within the Great White Brotherhood that would have conveyed this information at that early stage in his life. One of the things I have discovered in the writing and research of this book is that he went to school at Mount Carmel. And Mount Carmel had always been a holy mountain dedicated for a long time to the various sky gods or divinities, including Baal, B-A-A-L, Baal, which means light. Then later there was a whole dedicating to Jehovah. And there was a school there. The Essenes had a very powerful school there that John the Baptist went to, Jesus went to, and of course they were cousins 6 months apart, where they were trained until they were about 13 years old. So that little window that we have in the New Testament when he was 12 years old was attesting that the rabbinical Jews in Jerusalem insisted had to happen for all the young men who were being trained. They wanted to be sure that they had some basis in the Jewish teachings, and of course the amount of knowledge, wisdom, and information that Jesus revealed in that little scene, which of course we don't get the details in the Bible.
No,
they don't
not like
give us
that.
No, they don't tell us, hey,
well,
you
because
astrology.
Yeah, well, and also reincarnation, because all of the references to that were actually, except maybe two, were taken out of the Bible at the Ecumenical Council in, what was that, 500 A.D.? So they were hiding the fact that Jesus came out of the Essenes who not only believed in reincarnation but believed in many of the other things that you know, that he went on to teach.
You're absolutely right. I think that one of the things that's been so amazing, for example, in the Nativity, just to tell you a little bit about the book and our listeners about the book. The book has six sections, and in the very beginning, because most people in modern-day society don't even know there were these incredibly profound ancient mystery schools that hundreds of thousands of people went through, and some of the greatest philosophers and thinkers that we have in the ancient world and in the last 2,000 years are people who have sought these trainings and become initiates of these schools. And, you know, they include everyone from Plato, Socrates, Pythagoras, you know, way back in the 300-500 years before Jesus to, you know, in more modern day times, we have, you know, everyone from the, Rudolf Steiner and, Manly P. Hall and, John Dee and a lot of the people out of the time, like Botticelli and Shakespeare and, you know, that whole era where those teachings were beginning to surface again in the underground stream. But most people don't realize that there were these schools. So the book really opens with presenting the historic evidence for how they taught and what they taught about and the fact that they honored the divine feminine as well as the divine masculine.
Right.
And, of course, in modern-day Christianity, what's happened has been that we have honored the divine masculine, the Father and the Son, which was the second level of the mysteries. But we lost the foundational piece. We lost the honoring of nature and the expression of the sacred through the matrix of the divine mother energy. So
right.
It's one of the reasons why our society has been, you know, very off-kilter for a long time, because as we notice, when we look at the world around us, you know, 50% of the population is male and 50% is female, you know.
And I want to just interject here for our listeners that, and you know about this, Trish, because I was over at your house the other day and showed you the book. We have a new book out called Goddess Shift Women Leading for a Change. It's 42 women, female leaders around the world that are speaking of the goddess energy and how we need to use it in the coming millennia.
It's extremely important, and you got included in that book.
I did. I got included for medicine. So
I'm so proud.
Yeah.
I'm so proud.
And Stephanie said that my approach is totally unique and spiritually based, and I needed to be in the book. She was very, very sweet.
Well, you're in there with some other marvelous luminaries like Barbara Bush and I think Michelle Obama and some other really wonderful movers and shakers that have been really doing great good in the world. So congratulations on that.
Well, thank you. But I want to mention to our audience that the goddess energy is coming forth to balance that masculine energy. And we don't really know what this is going to look like, but we do know that as we get closer to the point where the ascension occurs, all of these energies will be balanced. Male, female, you know, all the polarities will be balanced. So this is a very important thing in our spiritual growth as a planet.
This is one of the things, too, that happens between the change of the ages. And
mm-hmm.
what I mean by that, of course, is that, you know, the great precession of the equinox is about a 26,000-year cycle, or
right.
25,920 years.
To be exact.
To be exact.
You're right.
And I tend to be very exact in my book.
Well, that's good.
My dad was a lawyer, so I have that sort of very,
make
sure it's precise, you know, mine.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But each one of the 12 astrological ages within that larger cycle is 2160 years.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus came in really within the first 100 years between the change of the age of Aries, which was
right.
all about war, you know, Alexander
mm-hmm.
the Great, the
yeah.
Roman Empire, and
the
age of Pisces. Exactly,
right.
the Greeks and the Romans.
Right.
And the age of Pisces. And during that cusp period of time, the planet is really energetically trying to rebalance the masculine and feminine every time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in some ages, it works better than in other ages. For
mm-hmm.
example, and between Aries, which, of course, can be the pioneer on the good side, but can be the victimizer or the warrior on
right.
the negative side,
mm-hmm.
and Pisces, which on the positive side is the mystic and the, you know, the kingdom of heaven is within and turn inside and connect with the oneness of all things, which is what Jesus was teaching. And the negative side of Pisces is unfortunately the victim who lays down and gives so much they become a carpet. So you have
the martyr. Yeah, the whole martyr idea. Right.
Exactly. So what you had was on the positive, positive side, it was a change from the masculine and it was intended to flip towards the feminine, because
mm-hmm.
Pisces is a feminine age. But unfortunately, what happened is the negative aspects really were too dominant, the patriarchal
mm-hmm.
Jewish teachings at that time and the patriarchal Roman empire at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the last 2,000 years, we've basically had a masculine-dominant, masculine-subdominant running the planet, which is why, unfortunately, there's been so much war, so much oppression, so much martyrdom. You know, we had the Inquisition and the, you know, Knights Templar and the burning of 5 to 9 million women. I mean, we've had a lot of persecution. So now, of course, we're at a different place, and we're
mm-hmm.
moving from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, we have a lot of brave souls that are coming in and choosing to do radical things like come in gay in order to help us to, as a planet, to balance out our masculine and feminine sides.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very important thing that happens. So this new age, of course, is really, age of Aquarius, is really meant to bring us into balance between these two extremes. And the mystery schools knew this long ago. So they taught
right.
the divine feminine as the foundation,
mm-hmm.
and then the mysteries of the divine father, who periodically comes into the world through his four great kumaras, or his four sons, and Jesus, of course, was one of those great Kumaras.
And for the listeners who may have been brought up more in traditional Christianity, I think it's not only important to understand the history of what happened to the books of the Bible, but to understand that there were originally a lot more books of the Bible, and many of them were removed, especially those regarding the women. And this was a deliberate move in order to present a certain picture and gain a certain control via this book. I mean, this was it was really a calculated move.
Very
as was taking, as was taking out the reincarnation aspect. And it was a bloody move. I mean, historically too, we can talk about that another day, but, you know, there's been a great battle between those who are educated in the mystery schools and understand the big picture, some of which you've just explained, the 26,000 year cycles, all of the balancing of polarities. And those who just simply want to gain as much power and control that they can in a single lifetime and really don't pay any attention to the fact that we're all eternal and that in itself of grabbing money, power, and control, especially power and control through the injuring of others in any means, brings about a karma that is very significant.
Well, of course, ultimately, you know, that which you judge or you persecute, you have to become in order to heal it. So, you know, the men who would oppress women, you know, yesterday get to come in as women now.
That are oppressed.
In order to experience it. So it is a great karmic lesson.
It is.
And, you know, the indigenous people believe that when you created rules or society, you should always think seven generations in the future. Would this be good 2 generations from now or 5 generations from now? If we exploit and use up all the oil now, what will we do then? If we pollute the air now, how will our great-grandchildren be able to breathe? Oh,
and if we spend all the money now and create debt for our I think we probably created debt for 7 generations forth, I think. Maybe.
Yeah, I tell you, there have been people really working hard on that kind of thing. So, you know, but I will say this, that the ancient mystery traditions, you know, worked with, they believed that we were souls that had to balance our physical body, our emotional body, and our mental body.
Right.
So just like the 3 tiers of the crown of Isis, who was the Egyptian goddess of wisdom and magic and healing in ancient Egypt, she wore a headdress that had like a 3-step crown that looks kind of like a throne.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea was that if we mastered these 3 aspects and integrated our real soul essence, our higher self, in balance with these, that we could let us become the Christed being.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they would say.
Right.
And in fact, I just finished writing a wonderful article on the mystical origins of Christianity and the roots of the original word Christian, which really goes back about 500 years before Jesus to the followers of Serapis. And Serapis wasn't a real person, as far as we can tell. He was an archetype, really, of Jesus before Jesus came in. He was called the weeping God or the long-suffering God who wept tears for the suffering of humanity. And he was depicted with long flowing hair and long flowing clothes and these implements or tools, hermetic tools of mastery by his side. For example, Serapis many times was shown holding a ruler or a measuring stick, meaning that he held the measure of the world in his hands. He would be standing on a crocodile or a dragon, much as later on we see St. George being a dragon slayer or St. Michael or even Horus, earlier than even Serapis, was known as the one who was able to subdue the great reptile. And, of course, this had to do with conquering our own reptilian nature.
Right.
And that nature, of course, as I call it, the four Fs, feeding, fleeing, fighting, and fornicating, you know. So, you know, conquering the 4 Fs, you know.
Yeah. Well, I want to interject something really funny I heard the other day. You know, two animals meet, and one animal thinks to itself, can I eat it? Will it eat me? And can I have sex with it? And that's the essence of what we're trying to get beyond with balancing of the overcoming the reptilian nature.
Well, you know, Serapis also, and I speak about Serapis because in essence we're talking about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
But Serapis wore a white dove on his head, a golden crown of wheat that represented the solar energy of the sun, and the plenty and abundance of bread. And he had this large serpent that had to do with the rising of the Kundalini energy,
right,
that was at his side. And the face of the serpent was a lamb, meaning I am one who has raised my chi force or Kundalini life force, but I offer myself as the pure unblemished lamb or the lamb of sacrifice. And so, you know, within the mystery schools, this is one of the most powerful things about them, is that they spoke with these hermetic symbols.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know the language of hermetics, you know, you just think, oh, well, it's a snake.
That's strange. Yeah.
It's a bird.
It's a bird.
That's really weird. Why would somebody wear a crown of, you know, sprouting wheat?
Right.
You know, we completely miss the significance. But if you understand the language of the symbols or of hermetics, mm-hmm. which I teach in this book, so this book has over 100 illustrations and is really a tour de force of mm-hmm. teaching the mysteries to people in the present time and connecting the dots between the true Christianity of Jesus, mystical Christianity, and the wisdom of the Great White Brotherhood or the great spiritual orders that have long overseen this planet.
Right. I was wondering, there was more than one blueprint of similar to Jesus before Jesus came forth, and I was just wondering if there might be something that we could understand this occurring because of the holographic nature of reality. It was a thought I had the other day that the hologram, you know, will turn and turn and turn until it crystallizes into something like Jesus, but
well,
that it's so fascinating to me that there were so many stories before that were similar.
Well, that's a very powerful point that you're making, because, you know, as the great Master Thoth said, as above, so below, and so above, as above, so below, and so as below, so above. And he's talking about that very holographic nature,
right,
and how these great solar lords, which is what I think you're speaking of, come in periodically. Every few
mm-hmm.
thousand years, they incarnate in a human form in order to uplift humankind. And Jesus, of course, you know, was definitely a master of masters. But as you say, he had been preceded by a number of solar lords who had done, you know, acted as heroes for humanity or teachers for humanity.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, being trained in all of those mystery traditions himself, it's not like he ran around and borrowed what they were doing.
No, huh?
It was more that he was the fulfillment of,
right, of the blueprint. They were creating a blueprint, and you know that's really what the solar lords and higher spiritual hierarchy beings that are higher than just planetary are doing. They come in to set blueprints, and so the first blueprint may not take as well, you know, because of conditions, so they send another one in. Isn't that fascinating? And then finally the blueprint set, and then it can come from the higher realms and Jesus can actually incarnate.
I think you're dead on with that. In fact, I'm speaking about these very subjects in March. There's here in Atlanta, there's a number of places where I will be speaking before I start going back out on the road internationally to talk about this. On March the 3rd, I'm doing a free talk at the Phoenix and Dragon, and then a week later, on the 11th, I'll actually be giving a talk with gorgeous PowerPoint presentation about the return of these Lords of Light. And it
there
is exactly this blueprint that you're speaking about.
Right.
And then
I didn't know you were doing that. That was great.
I am. And I'm doing a one-day workshop on March the 13th and March the 27th on the Lost Years of Jesus Part 1 and Part 2, where I'm actually showing
mm-hmm.
where he went, who taught him, what they taught him, and how their teachings are reflected in his own teachings, in his own ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll all be at the Phoenix and Dragon. And I'm speaking for Noetic Sciences at your wonderful Millennium Healthcare on the 18th.
Yes, we look forward to that.
Yeah, actually, well, maybe I will speak a little bit about the return of the Lords of Light, because I do believe that we're due for an incarnation of one of these profound beings, you know, any time now.
And that's what, you know, that the second coming of Christ may actually be a reflection of that. I mean, maybe there's, what I see is maybe the planet is going to get to a point where it is able to accept a higher vibration, and maybe with a better outcome than what, you know, than what happened with Christ. You know, I'm sure it was predestined and it was planned, but we need to rewrite that. You know, we don't need to have it just martyrdom.
I would absolutely agree with you.
That interpretation is 2,000 years too much of martyrdom in my humble opinion.
Well, you know, as I may have shared with you, my writing this book was not my idea.
Yes,
I actually was in the middle of writing another book called Decoding the Mysteries of the Ages, and I put a little section in it on Jesus, and then it got bigger and bigger and bigger as I kept writing the rest of the book. And finally I thought, well, gosh, I'm just going to have to split these books or take it out altogether,
mm-hmm.
whatever, and I was debating what to do. And I actually had Jesus appear to me in my office, and he was not any of this long-suffering martyrdom that we've come to think of.
No.
He was joyous and light
uh-huh.
and bright and clear and heart-opening. I mean, enormously heart-opening. I just cannot say enough about the joy and the beauty of his presence. So, you know, he actually said, I want you to write a book about my lost years and secret teachings.
Mm-hmm.
There's been enough war and bloodshed in my name.
Well, no kidding. I mean, can you imagine? We need the truth now. We need it's time to bring back out the historical data. It's time to bring out the greater context in which Jesus was raised, and this is what your book's doing, and that's why I said it's going to set the traditional Christian world kind of
on its heels,
on its on something. But you know, a child has to grow up. A child has to release its belief in the tooth fairy, in Santa Claus, and in the Easter Bunny. It is now time for the human race to grow up and to drop the childish, self-centered, and narrow views that I believe traditional Christianity has held on to.
Well, I think there is certainly a lot of that, but I would like to say that this book is profoundly honoring to what I consider to be the real being of Jesus. And one of the things that's happened as we've had there are some very beautiful things in the gospel. Judge not lest you be judged,
mm-hmm.
love your fellow man as yourself, do unto others, the kingdom of heaven is within. So there are some very beautiful things that are still in the gospels. But as you've pointed out, there were over 50 Gnostic gospels, texts, that were taken out, removed, hidden, burned, that we know of, and I'm sure
mm-hmm.
that there were a lot more than that. In fact, some of my sources from India, his time in India,
mm-hmm.
have told me that there are over 63 different documents that were in the Vatican, and this is in the late 1800s, that talk about Jesus' time in the Far East alone, and that's only one of many countries that he went to.
And let me tell you, what I was asking in my religious upbringing, why was nothing that Jesus wrote ever put in the Bible?
That is the
I didn't understand that. I just
think
didn't
everyone
get it.
Would ask that question. They would be
you
like,
would.
Well, how come his own writings aren't in here?
And then you know about Greg Braden's discovery of the Angel Scroll, which may or may not be, but may be his writings. And it's clear because the first 100 words of it's talking about reincarnation. Of course it wouldn't be put in.
Well, you begin to understand some of the reasons why they couldn't put these things
allow
in.
It.
Allow it.
Allow it.
I think what would happen is people would start saying, well, I'd like to learn how
he
learned.
Right,
I'd like
exactly.
to study in those same ways.
Mm-hmm.
And all of these things become highly personally empowering for individuals.
Right.
I think that there's definitely two philosophies about reincarnation, and one is the well, it doesn't matter what I do in this lifetime because after all, you know, I can get away with murder and, you know, I'll come back and I can pay for it in another day.
Right.
But in truth, if you have a deeper understanding of reincarnation and cosmic law, as you were pointing out earlier, those things you do to others now comes back to you. So if you're good and kind and loving and fair with
mm-hmm.
others, even though you may not see it for a while, depending on how much karma you have to clean out, eventually
mm-hmm.
that's what returns to you. And if you do badly unto others, in order to learn the lessons, yep, you get to come back as one of the people that you've oppressed.
Right. And like we say, that's a cosmic law. That's not a local law. So
not a local law. You can't negotiate with a local man.
So you know, even if you don't come back to Earth, you might still have to face those returns of those energies. So
no bribery possible. Which is of course one of Martin Luther's original, you know, things when he was so upset that people were paying indulgences to the church, and that
mm-hmm.
basically allowed them to rape and pillage and take whatever they wanted as long as they could pay their way back into heaven.
Right.
And that was one of Martin Luther's complaints was, hey, it's not by the deed of paying your way that you're saved. It's
mm-hmm.
through your actual transformation of your heart energy
right.
and your spiritual awakening that
mm-hmm.
that makes that connection. So
it is. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm real excited and I can't wait for you to finish reading the rest of the book because I think you really only got through and when I first gave that to you because it's about a 450 page book and we had
yeah.
to cut 200 pages out in the last edits and I had already put 200 pages aside
mm-hmm.
for a book about the secret teachings.
Yeah, my book ends at part 4, Jesus in India and Persia, but can we back up and talk a little bit about I don't know if you still have the same parts that I'm looking at, but I think you do.
There's six sections. We have the introduction
yeah.
of the mysteries.
Right.
We have actually Jesus and the Nativity,
mm-hmm.
which really deals with a lot of hidden information from the Essenes about the fact that there were 4 stars
right.
And there were 4 magi, although it appears that one of them did not make it. And these 4 stars in the heavens actually merged into one really large star, which, of
mm-hmm.
course, does not sound like any kind of star that we would really know of today. So I take a look at what the possibilities are for the star. You know, could it have been what we think of as a UFO today or an interdimensional ship that were overseeing
mm-hmm.
his birth? But I also look at very traditional astronomical phenomena like meteors and conjunctions. And then once
mm-hmm.
we identify the days where these conjunctions took place, we're able to look at their significance within the ancient mystery traditions. And that in itself is very profound
mm-hmm.
because Jesus may well have been a Libra. He may well have been a Leo,
mm-hmm.
or he could have been a Capricorn. And those three are really, I'd say, the biggest single contenders for his actual birth date. And I could talk at length about that, but
right.
That's the first section, and then we move into the Essenes. The next section
mm-hmm.
is and his time in Alexandria and in Egypt, and the Therapeutae that were the parent branch of the Essenes,
mm-hmm.
and the temples of Heliopolis, and the existence of a secondary Jewish temple that most people know nothing about. When we think of Judaism, we think of rabbinical Judaism as it existed 200 years after the Persian invader Antiochus III and his son Antiochus IV had already gone in and basically killed lots and lots of the real legitimate Jewish priests. And then you have Herod the Great, who came in 37 B.C., who literally wiped out 41 members of the 71-member Sanhedrin High Council of Priests. So
my
by
goodness.
The time you get to the time of Jesus, the actual real teachings of Moses had been lost. The
mm-hmm.
Essenes had them, and this temple, fully functioning Jewish temple of Zadokite priest had them in Egypt. And they had asked permission around 190 BC to set up this temple because they saw with the destruction of the damage that was being done in Israel at that time that the teachings could be lost.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole section really talks about a very little known but very important aspect of Jewish history, where the true teachings of Moses, which I'm sure many of them came straight out of Egypt, because
mm-hmm.
Moses, of course, was a high priest
who
studied in the temples of Heliopolis.
Right. Right.
So there's a whole that whole section is really explaining where the brotherhoods were within that area. They were hiding out, of course, as Essenes in Israel, but Jesus would have had pretty easy access to them through Alexandria and Heliopolis and the Therapeutae and this temple at Leonopolis or
mm-hmm.
Bubastis. It's the same place, just different, the Greek name and the Egyptian name. So, so then the next section goes into the Celtic teachings, and those are incredible. It's one of my favorite sections. I love that section because Jesus really loved the Celtic lands.
Mm-hmm.
He went there when he was 7 with his mom and his uncle, Joseph of Arimathea, who, as you know, was a tin merchant and
mm-hmm.
a very wealthy man with his own ships. And in fact,
he supplied most of the tin to the Roman Empire, so he was like not a small player.
Exactly. Tin
was a big player.
In the manufacture of bronze arms,
which
the Roman Empire had to have a constant supply, and that was the only known supply was in the Castorati
mm-hmm.
Mountains in Britain. So
right.
Joseph had a pretty much a monopoly on that, which made him an extremely wealthy and well-traveled
mm-hmm.
man, and also gave Jesus the ability to travel on ship anywhere he wanted. So we have reports of him at the age of 7 in England. We have
mm-hmm.
reports again when he's about 14 or 15 when he went to study with the Druids
mm-hmm.
The stories are that he was there about 2 years, but he was so advanced that in the oral exams his answers just sort of blew everybody away, and they said, okay,
mm-hmm.
well, you know, off to India with you.
Yeah, really. that makes sense, you know.
It does.
He came in with that energy, so he taught his teachers.
He did.
Yeah.
So then we have him coming back to England at about the age of 30. Once he had come back from India and Chaldea
mm-hmm.
and Persia and all of those things, he was in Palestine for a couple of years, reconnecting
mm-hmm.
with friends, his childhood friends, and the rabbis and the people who really were important to him. And then it seems like he went to England at the age of 30, R&R,
mm-hmm.
before beginning the next part of his mission, which was studying for seven years in the mystery schools of ancient Egypt. Now, this is the one place where, in the manuscript, where I beg to differ with the classic version that we read in the Gospel of Luke. Luke,
mm-hmm.
who, as we know, didn't really know Jesus, just like Paul didn't know Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't study with him while he was still alive.
Right.
But Luke, who I think worked hard to be a good historian, but he said he appeared to be a man around 30.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it appeared to be as important because when you go to the Gospel of John, which I think is much more accurate, was probably written before any of the other Gospels, and John, there's a whole incident in the Gospel of John where Jesus is saying to these Jewish people, I was before Abraham was. And the Jews
mm-hmm.
look at him and they're like, are you crazy, man? You're not yet 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you might say that to a 40-year-old or a 43-year-old or a 45-year-old, but you would not say to a 30-year-old, you're not yet 50.
Right.
You know, that's not, and in fact, one of the early church bishops, Tertullian, I think that's how you say his name. It's a hard name to say, Tertullian or something. He says that Jesus was definitely in his older years
mm-hmm.
and that he would not have been allowed to be a rabbi at a young age that that was an honor that really belonged to older people.
Right.
And that by making him 30, which is something that they did because of numerical significances within the mysteries. For example,
mm-hmm.
there are 33 steps of initiation,
mm-hmm.
which correspond to the 32 vertebrae of the spine, and the 33rd step is the atlas and the activation into
mm-hmm.
the opening of the third eye. So there are certain reasons why numerical numbers were used
mm-hmm.
in the Gospels, but they're encoded for initiates of the mysteries.
Well, can I interject one thing? Guess
sure
what
thing.
Chapter I have in the Goddess book.
33?
Yes, I do.
That's perfect for you, you little master.
Isn't it?
Well,
and
you're amazing.
I thought that was so, well, I didn't do that, of course, but I looked it up in the symbology book I have, and 33 is healer and spirituality, you know, in the classic sense. But you're explaining it in the deep mystery sense, which is, it's a master number, that's correct.
Absolutely. Well, you know, within the ancients believed that the universe began with sound, you know, as John
mm-hmm.
says, in the beginning was the word. And this is, of course, what physics is discovering today. From sound and vibration comes
mm-hmm.
organizing of all matter and photonic, sound first and then light. So actually the three principles are love, sound, and light in that
right.
order. And the creation of the universe. And this is was taught in metaphysics, and of course now we're learning in pure old scientific physics that this is very true.
Mm-hmm.
But they consequently put a great deal of emphasis on the learning of mathematics and sacred geometry, because they believe that everything we see in our world, the explicate world, when you go into
mm-hmm.
the inner worlds that help to create it, is formed through patterns.
Right.
You know, vortex patterns. And so consequently,
mm-hmm.
name, which is sound, has a vibration. And this is how they practiced the study of gematria, which was
right.
assigning numerical values to letters. And certainly of the, you know, there's 1 through 9, the primary numbers. But then once you get into double digits, the ones that really matter the most are the 11, which is the two pillars of knowledge,
mm-hmm.
the 22, and the 33. And all three
right.
of those are master numbers. So
right.
I can't say I'm surprised that you got 33, being who you are.
Well, I thought it was a very interesting little coincidence or synchronicity, as we say.
Yes, that's perfect.
It's perfect, right.
Well, you know, I actually was going to have 22 chapters in this book, and I don't even know. I think I may have wound up with either 22 or 24 or something like that. But
mm-hmm.
it may have worked out that there are 22 in this book. Do you know your numerology too well enough to know what your soul number is?
You know, at one point I did.
I'm
not sure. No, I don't remember enough
to
say on the air.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
That would be great. Well, so then we go from the Celtic lands, which one of the things I love, I've been to England maybe 30, 40 times, and I usually go over and speak every year in England.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been out to the West Country, the area that is now called Glastonbury, but in ancient times was known as the Isle of Avalon.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, this place is very linked with the Arthurian legends. And the legends of the Holy Grail and, you know, King Arthur and Lancelot and
mm-hmm.
the Round Table and all of that, which is really a deeper conversation about the loss of the Divine Feminine and 13 being a number of the Divine Feminine, the 12 around the one, which is the 12 signs of the zodiac around the
mm-hmm.
one. The one in the middle, of course, is the sun, the
right.
solar lord. So
Jesus had 12 disciples.
12 disciples, just
mm-hmm.
as there are 12 tribes
mm-hmm.
of Israel and there are 12
right.
zodiacal signs. And in
mm-hmm.
the Druids, there were 12 chief Druids around the head Druid of all. So, you know, they actually noticed how the patterns of the exterior world were reflective of deeper cosmological significance. And they worked with these patterns. Rather than trying to swim upstream, they swam with the current.
Right.
So in the Celtic lands, you know, Jesus, when he lived there at 14 or 15, he lived on the Isle of Avalon. and he built a little hut. And I actually have illustrations, some wonderful original illustrations in this book that show the cosmological significance of this island and how it represented the cosmic egg arising from the sea, the birth of the divine mother and father giving birth to the world. And that's one of the reasons it's always connected with the Holy Grail and, you know, the two streams of water that flow out of Chalice Well, the masculine and the feminine, the red and the white streams. So anyway, then we go to India and Persia in our next section. And then finally, the mysteries of ancient Egypt, where I begin to really talk about the real deep level initiations that were given by the Great White Brotherhood and the complex of underground temples that exist below the Giza Plateau.
Well, I definitely want to interview you again once I have a chance to read the last two sections.
Because I haven't
read them, and my book stops with Jesus in India, I believe.
I think you've only got through the Celtic section.
I think you're right. No, you're right.
You don't have India and Persia because
I've got about half the book.
You have about half the book. I think we started off with about 550 pages, and then after my first editor, who I think she knew nothing about the other mysteries. All she knew was traditional Christianity. So, you know, she had a million questions. And so after we were done, we had another 100 pages. And so then I had to cut 200 pages off of the book.
No.
I cut 100 off, and I was very, very blessed to have an excellent editor the second time around who is a professor of intellectual history at one of the major universities with a focus in Christianity and comparative religions, including Neoplatonism. And, of course, the Neoplatonists were basically the mysteries after Jesus. Were the Platonists or the mysteries before Jesus.
Before Jesus.
So she completely got it and became really an enormous fan of the book because she understood enough of the history to understand how all these pieces fit together. And I think this is one of the things with so many wonderful, very dedicated scholars of the last, you know, 1,600 years, many of whom, especially we see this in the last 500 years, have sought to make sense. You know, they resonated with the beauty of Jesus, the heart of Jesus' essential message. But at a historical level, they had so many pieces of the puzzle that were missing that it was very difficult for anyone to be able to answer these questions because they had no context. And one of the reasons we haven't had much of a context is because, of course, the Roman Catholic Church, with the issuing of the Theodosian decrees around 385 AD, set out to systematically destroy all the libraries, all the records, all the temples of these ancient mysteries. And they killed and murdered and defamed and burned. And, you know, in fact, one of the things that is very interesting is when they were sent to Egypt, to the Temple of Serapis. There was a great library there with about 70,000 volumes in the Serapeum. That's what they call that temple. After they had destroyed it, they found the emblems of Jesus, the Iscus, or the fish, the Visica Pisces, all inscribed in the lower levels of the temple. But, of course, you know, this really didn't suit the financial or the political agenda at that time, which was to say, hey, Jesus was the fulfillment. This is what they could have said, and it would have worked just fine. He was the fulfillment. All these other paths have been leading us here for thousands of years, and here we have a walking, talking, flesh and blood fulfillment of this. But instead of doing that, they just sought to eradicate the evidence that those other paths had ever even existed.
Yeah, that's a tactic that they've been doing for almost 2,000 years. And you know, what I think is going to happen, I think a lot of things are going to come forth with, like your book, tremendous amount of historical evidence and show it will enlighten the people who are interested as to what really happened. So all these things that were hidden are now able to come forth now, and probably because I believe there's a great deal of spiritual protection coming in March. And so I wasn't at all surprised that your book was delayed until March.
Well, I think from the first moment that my wonderful acquisitions editor saw it, he just mm-hmm. knew. It was like he had worked with the deeper mysteries. I mean, he was he's a deep guy, a deep thinker, and a wonderful researcher himself. And he recognized the integrity of mm-hmm. the information and the depth of knowledge. Yeah. And it was supposed to be released first in June last year, mm-hmm. but the editing took longer. And then it was supposed to be released with Dan Brown's book, The Lost Symbol, in September.
Right. It wasn't ready yet. There's something important about waiting for the right moment.
Well, it is actually going to be, it's been accepted as the book of the month for One Spirit Book Club for the
Great.
Month of April. I think it's the alternate selection, so hopefully mm-hmm. people who will be hearing this can, you know, get it at the Barnes & Noble or Borders in March, or if they get it in One Spirit, they can pick it in April. But I tell people I've been in the Jesus cave now, my Lord, for
you have been.
3 years, and I'm coming out of the cave.
Yeah,
and so now I'm starting to speak and teach.
Uh-huh.
I would invite any of our listeners that would like to have me come and speak for groups in their mm-hmm. cities or towns or conferences or expos, you know, to contact me through my website or give me
mm-hmm.
Please give your
website. That would be good.
It's www.tricia, T-R-I-C-I-A, McCannon, M-C-C-A-N-N-O-N, speaks.com. TriciaMcCannonSpeaks.com. And if you go to the website, you'll find my phone number. You should be able to call me. But the number just for, if you don't have an internet, it's 404-355-2211. And as you know, Susan, I've, you know, traveled all over the world speaking and teaching for about, 15 or 20 years, and it was a great personal discipline for me to come off of the road and step back from all of that to do this book. But because I believed in the project so much, and after all, when someone like Jesus really
comes and asks and requests your services.
Right, it's really hard to turn something like that down.
That's true.
Okay.
I'll do it.
So actually, that's not what I said at first. I said, well, can I finish this other book first?
That's typically Trisha's, I would say. Let's bargain.
And then I said,
I would do the same thing.
I said, why me?
You know, why me, Because you can do it.
Well, I was raised Episcopalian, and, mm-hmm. I have a great mm-hmm. deal of honor and love and respect for all the many wonderful people who are involved with the church. But as you know, I've spoken about angels and, extraterrestrials and inner planes, because I'm an initiate of many different spiritual traditions, from the Viragi masters mm-hmm. of the Far East to the goddess mysteries mm-hmm. and the Egyptian mysteries.
Right.
And so I think it's really because I always had one foot in the world of Christianity and one foot in the world of the mysteries, since I'm a clairvoyant and have seen these things. I set out to find the proof and become trained in them. And I think that must really be the reason.
And you probably had a soul contract as well. Which is, it's just fulfillment of what you came in to do. And I'm so proud of you. I think that the book is great. And, maybe someday you'll be able to publish the unabridged version, like Stephen King did with his material.
Very funny.
It is, isn't it?
Well, we're
coming to the close of our hour now. We've been having a delightful conversation with Trisha McCannon in her book. Let me get the exact title here. It is Jesus, the Explosive Story of the 30 Lost Years in the Ancient Mystery Religions. And I'm going to have Trisha back probably in a month or two to discuss the last part of the book. I think we need to give it a little bit more time than we had today.
That would be wonderful.
So next week we have Jonathan Ellerbe, Your Spiritual Personality, and the week after that, Michael Brown, The Presence Process, A Healing Journey into Present Moment Awareness. And this coming week we have Noetic Science. Lawrence Perry and Dr. Gould will be presenting some of the information that they have regarding beginning the new chapter in self-development based on pretty much a biophysics approach supported by biochemistry. I'm really excited about this because I think it's really ushering in a new medicine. And then the third Thursday in March, Tricia will be honoring us with her presentation on this book.
Oh, it'll be my pleasure. And I hope in the meantime, if people are interested in finding out other presentations, feel free to go to my website. I'm just updating the schedule next week, so give it a few days. But again, it's TrishaMcCannonSpeaks.com.
Well, great. Well, wonderful interview, and I look forward to seeing you in March, if not sooner.
Oh, thank you so much, Susan. It's always a delight anytime I get to see you or talk with you. And thanks for having me on the show.
All righty.
Okay. We'll speak soon.
Okay. This is Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. See you next week.